The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Meet the latest minority group, the adults of the United States. That's right, over half the population now below 26 years of age. And so that means we adults are now a minority group, and it's about time we found out what the majority has been doing. Because the majority group seems to be getting in a lot of trouble, especially in the field of marriage. Today, marital unhappiness is the modern accepted status of marriage, it seems. Witness the skyrocketing divorce rates and the many homes in which marital unhappiness prevails, homes that are psychologically or spiritually separated, though perhaps physically together, rising illegitimacy, youthful marriages, venereal disease reaching epidemic proportions. These are some of the really pressing problems worrying leaders in education, in the clergy, and in government today. They see the trends in our Western way of life as dangerous to the very preservation of our free society, an enemy to our society just as surely as the stockpiling of hydrogen and atomic bombs. But the question is, what causes divorce? What is the matter with our marriages? Why are so few people successful at one of the biggest contracts they ever sign, a marriage license? Why is it so many people end in failure at marriage? Are we willing to take a good long look at what leads up to marriage? It's been said the trouble with American marriages is American courtship. Now, the same thing is true with you people in Australia or the Philippines, for that matter, although I would say in the Philippines the customs are different enough that it may be a little bit different in the divorce statistics. The Americans, you see, lead the world in divorce. It's getting bad and worse in Britain, but it's not quite caught up with the United States proportionately yet. And so to take a look at the one nation of earth that seems to be smitten with this disease a little more deeply than any other, let's ask ourselves, what are the habits of modern American teenagers and youth in dating, in the contact with members of the opposite sex that leads toward marriage? It's about time we of the minority took a look at what the majority group is doing. Are young people willing to take a look at what they are doing, at the practices of dating and at the processes of selecting a mate? Now, recently, the Associated Press released The Wire, and this was in the words of a sociology professor, Judson Landis, that unhappy teenage marriages are rapidly becoming one of the nation's major social problems. I've got a couple of letters here that are going to wrench your heart about it, I imagine, that have come into us among the many, many hundreds that do, about teenage marriages and some of the wretched situations that result. That doesn't mean every last one of them is doomed to failure at all. Some of them undoubtedly have succeeded, but the facts do not lie. The statistics are there and there for all to read, that a growing number of them are ending in divorce, that marriage and parenthood have been oversold to America's children, and this same man, the sociology professor, said that more than 2 million American girls between 13 and 17 are married every year. And the teenage marriages last year produced 600,000 babies. Now, Robert Harmon, who is assistant professor of business at the University of California, said teenage husbands earn little more than $2,000 a year on the national average. And that's about a third of the adult wage. Now, before going on, let me give you just one example of which I happen to know, from a woman who said she was absolutely desperate. Her letter came to our office about just one such teenage marriage and showed you what the outcome of it was. At least let's be willing to admit both sides of the coin, and both extremes of the situation do exist. So for all of you teenagers, whether you're 13 to 19, and if you think teenage marriage is just the thing, you of course are welcome to your opinion. Is your opinion based upon factual knowledge, upon plenty of counsel, upon wisdom, upon your own personal observations or your vast years of experience? Or is it based upon a rather emotional idea of your own? Now, if it is, don't get angry at me. Get angry at yourself. If it isn't, and if you really feel you have full possession of the facts and you can prove, and you feel you can prove scientifically, and that you could encourage a sociologist to change his point of view, or a member of the clergy, or an educator, or a government leader, and that you feel going steady is just the thing, and that getting married at age 15 or 16 is just the thing to do, well, analyze it, look at it, research it, give it a little bit of thought. Because after all, you know, you're the one that's going to get involved in the marriage, not me. You're the one that is going to have to live your own life, and nobody's going to be able to live it for you. But this letter is about just one teenage marriage, so at least for whatever it's worth, here's what happened to that one. The mother said, "I'm desperate. I'm sick from worry," she wrote to us. "Ever since I remember, I've had a rough time, and I could fill a book with it, but I won't. I'll just start from about 2 years ago. This is my immediate worry, and I mean worry. My son, at 16, quit school. I tried every way I could to keep him from it. He never liked school and was always behind, so when the day arrived, he quit and went to work. He's a good kid, he's not lazy, and by the time he was 17, he had found a little gal and talked his dad into signing for him to get married. It was not a case of having to, by the way, he just wanted to. A year later, he had a son. Now, this was a big expense to a kid with no insurance and no job. 3 months later, the baby had to have surgery. Also, my son. Three in the hospital is quite a bill all in 1 year. We stripped ourselves trying to help them out. We have sold, lost, and mortgaged everything we worked hard for 30 years, and we didn't have much to start with. I'm in a mess of debts on account of it, and worse off than when I was in the Depression. One thing led to another with them, one bad break on top of another. To raise some quick money for rent, food, and so on, my son sold a couple of things that were not even paid for yet, thinking he would still be able, with that additional money, to keep up with the payments. But it got worse all the time, and so finally he was put in jail. I had to put up the last and only $100 I had to go his bond, and he has to raise $400 for the thing that he sold or face the judge in a week, and also $100 for something else. They don't have any money. He doesn't have a job. They're expecting another baby in a month. Their rent is overdue, and they're expecting to be put out tonight. No way to go to a hospital when the time comes, and no one to go to. Don't know where they're going to sleep. I lost my home. We wound up in a small trailer, and I've got a 13-year-old son to raise and educate yet, and I can't make it if this worry and dread is not removed. I have fought a losing battle. Unless the Lord steps in now, I feel it will all be lost. Please pray for me not to lose my mind. Now, you know, you could sort of say at the end of that letter, so you think you've got problems. How do you like those? Here's a fellow who quit school, and therefore, of course, has not even a high school diploma, and logically, then, is going to have a very difficult time getting a job, regardless as to in what field. And already been in and out of jail because of debts, a horrible situation, one baby with an operation already and another one on the way. There may have been some congenital deformity, maybe reasons why the children shouldn't have even been engendered in the first place. That's kind of a headache for a lot of people all the way around, isn't it? I don't imagine even the judge enjoys it. I don't imagine that any of the family enjoys it. I don't imagine that family that is now under a terrible financial curse of mortgages and sale of property they'd gradually accumulated by hard scrabble living for over 30 years have enjoyed that marriage a bit. And the couple in the marriage are certainly not enjoying it. But maybe love conquers all. Maybe that's the view of people today. You know some of the music that teenagers tap their feet to and sometimes wiggle and gyrate and jig up and down to, incidentally? When you hear the beat, that's one thing, but have you ever investigated some of the words? Have you ever thought about some of these songs? There's one out now that has a real nice melody, I guess, but boy, what a message in it. "Strangers in the night," it begins, "exchanging glances." Now, it's talking about two people who never laid eyes on each other before. It's a big smash hit. Real current popular song. Never saw each other before, but they're wondering what the chances were they'd be sharing love. That term is used in the song. Before the night was through. Even before the dawn of morning, they're going to be sharing love. "Now something in your eyes was so inviting," goes the song. I wonder what that was. Some kind of a look that was real inviting. These teenagers are dancing away, you know, and jigging up and down and bouncing and shaking their head and being told that something in somebody's glance at night was so inviting and something in the smile was so exciting and something in the heart just told this other person, quote, from the words of the song, "I must have you," end quote. Now, the title of this hymn may be, is there one called "Lost in the Night"? Maybe this one ought to be retitled "Lust in the Night." We could sort of rewrite the song title. I don't know the title of this one, but it talks about strangers in the night, two lonely people who were just up to a moment ago totally lonely, but when we said our first hello, the song says, little did we know that love was just a glance away. A warm, embracing dance, just a little distance away, and ever since that night that they'd been together, and they were lovers at first sight, and they were going to stay in love forever and ever, and it turned out so right for these strangers that met in the night. Now, that's about as fanciful a dream as the Wizard of Oz, but that is the copy that makes up music that people hum and sing. And, you know, the romanticism of the Western world, you don't need to be told about that. We're the most romantic people, and that means like the Romans were, you know, doing as the Romans did, that the world has ever seen. And some of the dating practices are almost unbelievable. Now, recently I was quoting from an article in Life magazine about the trouble with American marriages is American courtship, and the fact that American courtship begins so young that it leads to youthful marriages. And did you know, and I have the statistics here to give you, that 9-year-old children are dating? And did you know that many 12-year-old children go steady? And did you know that recently a little 8-year-old girl came home crying because her boyfriend had jilted her? And did you know that 40% of 11-year-old children date? Oh, yeah, that's right. 40% of little tiny toddlers, boys and girls age 11 are dating. Now, maybe you agree with that. Well, again, you're welcome to your opinion. But it's about time you took a good long look at what all of this youthful dating and going steady is doing to us, and what it's doing to our children, more important. It's not doing anything to you, aside from giving you a lot of bad news to read, maybe a lot of heartache in your relatives and your personal acquaintances and people you know. So I said that in a few broadcasts, because I've been talking about the laws of marriage, about what marriage is, whether it's a psychological or sociological something or other that people feel they need for security, whether it's the result of an evolutionary process that was sort of something that grew out of the apes because they travel in families, I'm told, or whether or not it was designed and had an inventor and therefore has laws, which laws, if you obey, are going to bless the marriage and guarantee its success, which laws, if you break, are going to curse the marriage and guarantee it a breakup, which, of course, even by itself is illegal, depending upon which law you're talking about. Now, what does it mean to fall in love? A fall is an accident. A lot of people are pushed. But this business of lust in the night, I mean of love in the night that you hear sung about so much, is rather ridiculous. To think that you can't even see a person by the light of the day. Now, they may have a ghastly complexion. They may have a horrible wash on their hair. There may be something terribly wrong with them. But in the darkness of night, a couple of people wink at each other and fall in love forever, and it turned out to be so good. So says music today. But what is this thing of falling in love? Sociology professors sometimes ask college students in their classes to get a good lively discussion about falling in love. And they report that they oftentimes get a blank stare, and the kids say, well, what do you mean falling in love? Everybody knows that falling in love is as simple and natural as breathing out and breathing in. They've been told so. The movies say so. The songs say so. The serials on television say so. And other kids say so. And besides, they just know it that way because they feel the tingle up and down their spine when the old black magic begins to work, and there's nobody else but you, and they say that falling in love is wonderful besides that. So at least all young people and many older people begin to think that falling in love requires no definition. But you know, sociologists today are not so sure. Now, love is one of the oldest words in the human language and one of the most misinterpreted and least understood. And although it is one of the oldest words in human language, if you were to read literary classics, and certainly if you were to read the Bible, you would find that in history, love, now this may not prove anything to the modern mind, but I'm just stating it as a fact, that you would prove that history would indicate to you that love in ancient times, and not so far back either, was far more frequently applied to God, to country, to parents, and to brothers and sisters, than to husband or wife, and certainly much more frequently to husband and wife than to boyfriend or girlfriend. And the love a man is supposed to experience for a maid today, and at least you've got to admit that a man is normal if he loves a girl, because there's a great deal of the abnormal kind that is also talked about in the Bible that is difficult to understand, and that, of course, many members even of the clergy are saying that they feel they should condone today. I want to hold your hand, some of the songs say, and you wonder whose hand they mean. I think we're familiar with that. What was it? There was a book about the third man or something like that, sort of a takeoff on the third man theme. I don't know what it was, but something like that. At any rate, that was supposed to have grown out of the age of chivalry.
and how the lute players went around making up songs to their girls, and the knights in shining armor rode around with a little favor on their spear. And social historians claim that love, the feeling of love, the man for the maid idea, the boy-girl idea of today, probably had its origin in the songs composed by those roving troubadours back in the time when knighthood was in its flower in the 12th to 13th centuries. But even then, in that age, and clear down to the age of the Puritans and on up to the time of the establishment of the United States of America as a nation, that fleeting an emotion, which people regarded then as rather a passing, fleeting fancy, a little bit of dalliance, was nowhere near solid enough to be considered the basis for anything so important as marriage and the propagation of the race or establishing a family and a home and having children. It just wasn't assumed to be a part of it. So at least this type of thing of dating and the free selection of a mate by a young person who you would hardly turn loose with your car keys yet is a very new innovation. It really is. Now today in the United States, 40% of the brides are between the ages of 15 and 18. And within 5 years, half of those marriages are going to end in divorce. These are the statistical analyses of the researchers on the subject. Almost half of all women being married, girls, are between the ages of 15 and 18. And of those teenage marriages, within 5 years, half of them will end in divorce. Now, why do teenagers get married? Well, of course, one of the big answers is many of them have to. I think that's one thing that we're going to say in a few minutes about going steady, because that's one of the natural outgrowths of going steady. For instance, 3 girls a week leave a large Portland high school because they are pregnant. And there are many high school kids who don't even know where the babies come from yet. Nobody's gotten around to telling them, but they're surely coming along, aren't they? Now, infidelity in marriage is exonerated and held up as being a lofty thing today. People are saying that it's practically good for your marriage. As a matter of fact, one theologian says, depending on the circumstances, unmarried love could be infinitely more moral than married love. Now, with the pressures of all the entertainment and all the music and the jazz and the pressures from other kids, and with the pressures of what is called the new morality and just the sociological change of the new freedoms of the Western world, the teenagers don't need any members of the clergy telling them that premarital sex is all right, that's for sure. But the sin of fornication in adults, commercial or not, is so universal in its myriad forms in every society that so claims some of the lawmakers to penalize it at all, as such, is to indict the whole society of a gross and manifest hypocrisy. That's just the point to which it has come today. Now, teenage marriages result from going steady most of the time. Sometimes they result from a rather quick and passing acquaintance with a member of the opposite sex, but the question is, why go steady? What are the reasons for going steady? Why do young people go steady? And is it good? Should they go steady? In an article appearing in the Reader's Digest not so long ago was the title, Going Steady, Who Needs It? And the writer said, they were stopped cold by a cartoon in a national magazine that pictured a teenage couple. She was wearing a skirt that was obviously rather bulging around the middle and very, very tight, and she said, and it was supposed to be humorous, Henry, I think you and I will have to start going a whole lot steadier. Now, the idea suggested by that little cartoon, if you can call it that, was that everybody who goes steady is a candidate for a sudden marriage, the shotgun variety. But you know what's happening? Kids are going steady because of a need for social security and because of a feeling of embarrassment and because of the lack of ability of being able to meet other people and because of pressures of being in the in crowd and being the person that is doing the thing that is done, that is just the thing to do. So they solve the problem of emotional insecurity and shyness by having the security of always having a date for the next big affair. As a matter of fact, one executive director of the American Association of Marriage Counselors, Dr. David May, said that it's almost like that the social life of our young American people begins to resemble a vast Noah's Ark in which the thing to do is either go in two by two or not at all. And since most people aren't at ease, naturally, with members of the opposite sex, if they can just go steady, then they have a ready-made date and the security of always having someone to go with. But the second major reason, or shall we say the outgrowth of going steady, and this is absolutely proved by some of the atrocious statistics available, among them the skyrocketing rate of venereal disease, incidentally, is that it gives the children, boys and girls, a whole lot of excuse for sexual freedom and privileges. And if you were to listen to the voice of some of the youthful 13, 15, 16-year-olds who had been going steady for several years, and listen carefully to what they have to say about it, you would admit that's an absolute truth. And that those intimacies often result in premarital pregnancies. That 17% of the babies that are born out of wedlock are born to teenagers. And that over half of the wives in high school were already pregnant when they got married. That 80% of the wives of high school grooms were already pregnant when they got married. And remember that 40% of all brides today are teenagers. Now, you put that all of them together and you begin to wonder, why go steady? It's a very new innovation. It's a brand new thing in our society. It didn't used to occur. Now, they also claim it's cheaper. They go steady because you don't have to spend much money to impress a different girl each weekend. You just sort of relax together. You're out together all the time. If you don't have money for a Coke, you just say so and she understands. It's estimated that the average boy spends about $1,000 on dates before he becomes engaged in most metropolitan suburbs and prosperous communities. The sum is probably several times that. And, of course, it isn't that he spends his own money most of the time anyhow. But dating and courtship needs a good long look today because it can have an awful lot of damaging side effects. Now, in an article that appeared again in Reader's Digest entitled Things My Mother Never Told Me, about some of these liberties that are taken in going steady and the tragedies that occur in many a young life as a result of it, some of the statements made by some of the girls were really rather revealing. Going steady meant excluding everybody from your dates except you and the one and only, and how do you know the one unless you tried going with others, lots of others? And, of course, most people aren't willing to do this. Youngsters, they just want to go steady. It's the thing to do. You have to be in the in crowd. Now, you know, while your steady might look real great for a while, usually always they get to be looking rather plain after you've been with them for a while, and someone else comes along that looks pretty interesting, but, you know, you're hooked. You can't get free, and it would be the big social catastrophe if you were to be found to be the couple that is the most recent breakup. Oh, the trauma, the agony and the tears in high school of the latest going steady that suddenly was on the rocks. It was tantamount to the breakup of the judge and his wife in the community. It was really a horrible experience. And teenagers find themselves almost hooked. It's a psychological pressure. When they're going steady, well, they just are. And it's almost like a sort of a pseudo-marriage. And that's the trouble with it. Because it leads to things which belong in marriage and marriage only. And it leads to broken laws which are going to break young people. And what's happening today proves that is exactly the result. And there's an awful lot of wretchedness and unhappiness as a result of going steady. It's about time we took a good long look at some of the practices and asked ourselves, why go steady? Now, in the work of marital counselors, there is seldom a day that goes by when somebody doesn't say, well, what's wrong with our marriages? What's the matter with American marriages? Why can't we somehow reverse this course, reverse this trend of divorce? Now, you know, people pass it off rather easily by saying, well, it's a perfectly human relationship, and human nature being what it is, we're always going to have these failures. But let's face it, something is drastically wrong with American marriages, and it's something that is especially American. Something that is peculiar to our people, to our national way of life. And it is, if we're willing to face it, the unique and nationwide American custom of dating. Our custom in the United States, for you British people, is a good bit different. Now, it's, of course, coming to such libertine proportions in Great Britain, you can hardly believe it. Like even in little out-of-the-way towns on street corners waiting for buses, you'll see British youngsters. It's hard to tell which one is the girl, and sometimes you wonder if either one is. But they're standing there necking. They got long, ratty, filthy hair. And don't let me hurt anybody's feelings. If you got long hair and yours is clean, well, congratulations. That's fine. But some of them that I've seen weren't so clean. And my wife and I were shopping in one small town in Great Britain not so long ago, and there was a couple standing there waiting for the bus, broad daylight. They were leaning up against the corner of the bank building, just necking away like they were at home on the couch. It's rather disgusting, really, to see it right out in public because, you know, if everybody stood around and did that, even husbands and wives look a little bit ridiculous. But that's what was happening. So Britain isn't free from some of the unfortunate situations that are occurring today. But the pairing off of boys and girls without any serious intentions or obligations to either one, if you take a good long look at it, is rather ridiculous. It's a system under which any boy, apparently, may ask any girl, apparently, without any parental supervision or control whatsoever, with no further commitment implied, to go spend any indeterminate number of hours in any place of their mutual choosing, doing whatever happens to appeal to each of them accidentally. Now, if that's the definition of a date, that's just about the way it really is. You go for no express purpose to no particular place for no determined period of time to accomplish no special function, and you let whatever happened happen by accident. And this is supposed to be a perfectly acceptable social relationship, and all parents are supposed to go along with it, and even to encourage it, in ages down all the way to age 9. Well, you know, there's a great deal wrong with that practice. And even though we find it hard to believe that this custom as we know it is absolutely unique and is brand new, it is a fact. It doesn't exist like that in any other country until very recent ages or years when America has bequeathed some of that to other countries, and it never existed anciently in history. And there is a very direct relationship between growing venereal disease, growing congenital deformities, growing breakup in teenage marriages, growing wretchedness and unhappiness in many a home, and the skyrocketing divorce rate, and youthful marriage. Marriage that was not prepared for. Marriage that was not even remotely realized as a deep and a serious and a continual responsibility. Marriage that was entered into casually or by accident. It's about time we began to admit it and not just think because something is a social custom, it's right. It's time we took a good long look at our social customs. And it's time members of the clergy and teachers and parents began to speak out a little bit and give their children the guidance those children themselves want. And when you talk to them, and when you read their letters, and you get their quotations in some of these articles that I have before me, they want that guidance, and they'd like to have some restraint, and they'd like to know what are the proper bounds and just how far should we go. They ask questions like that of their parents. Should I kiss on my first date? They want to know. What's the matter? You a coward? You afraid to tell them no? It's about time we began to stand up on our hind legs, so to speak, and speak out and talk about the situation, because there are plenty of evils occurring to children as a result of a lack of guidance. You need to write in the meantime for these articles I've mentioned on the subject. It doesn't talk directly about dating, but there's a great deal about the subject of preparation for marriage in the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. And these articles I've mentioned for those of you who might be thinking about breaking up, on how to solve a family argument, and the one on how to have a happy marriage. They are free of charge. There is no price for them. Now I'll continue in this same subject next time about teenage dating and the practices, what's wrong with it, what might be right with it next time. So listen to the next broadcast about the dating customs of our Western world. But in the meantime, write for those articles, and especially write for the one on how to have a happy marriage and the one on how to solve family arguments. You'll be amazed at the laws that regulate marriage. Now, the current number of the Plain Truth magazine is free of charge, 52 pages, full color, no price. No one's going to call on you. It's free of charge. If you send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.